Hey everybody, TC Hale here. Since iTunes only keeps the last 100 episodes of any show, some of our show topics that seem to help the most amount of people are no longer available when people search on iTunes. So in an effort to make that information available to more people, from time to time we're going to re-air some of our most popular show topics. You can also go to kickitnaturally.com and search for any topic in our search box and you'll find previous shows. But for now, enjoy this episode on understanding depression that originally aired in January of 2014.
TC Hale is not a doctor and does not claim to be a doctor or licensed in any type of medical field. Don't be an idiot and use anything heard on the show as medical advice. This information should be used for educational purposes only, and you should contact your doctor for any medical advice. Now get off me. Hey everybody, and welcome to Kick It Naturally. I'm Kenna McEnroe, and I'm here with TC Hale, natural health expert, author, film producer, and I'm kidding. Hey TC.
How's it going?
Hi.
Calling me names before we start.
I know.
We usually wait until I get beat up on.
I know. And we're also here with Cutie Patootie, Will. Oh, it's Will today, right?
Yeah.
Will or Justin?
It's Will. Always.
We're with Will. And Will is celebrity trainer extraordinaire and all kinds of fun stuff.
He's super fancy, and he's also known as Cutie Patootie, just like I'm known as.
Yes. But I say that with is a term of endearment.
It is. It's very endearing.
Tony. If you like audiobooks, you're going to love our sponsor. Audible.com is giving all of our listeners a free audiobook of your choice and a free 30-day membership. Go to kickitinthenuts.com/audiobook to find the link so you guys can get yours.
The free book that Kenna got was How to Sound Like an Announcer.
That's right. Is it
Couldn't
working?
It totally
it's working.
Right. Cool. Today our topic is depression, which I'm so happy about because every time I see Tony, I get depressed automatically.
It's a problem. And I was thinking of a solution for that because a lot of times depression can come from not having an opportunity to punch somebody in the face. Aww. So I was thinking if you just started punching me in the face, that it would not depress you when you looked at me.
Okay.
We'll try it out.
I'll take that. Yeah, I'll take that advice. So we want all you listeners out there to go ahead and follow us on Facebook at Kick It In The Nuts. And we'll post topics there. And then you can ask us, you know, questions about, you know, any future shows we'll be doing. And then we'll answer your questions because we're awesome like that, really.
We're nice.
Yeah, we're nice people. So let's start talking about the topic. I kind of want to know some things.
Okay.
Besides external situations, what causes a person to become depressed?
Yeah, and that, you know, because before we get into, we're going to talk a lot about physiology today, and
more science.
And, I know, and we're going to talk about science, but we're going to talk about you know, things in your body that could create depression. But that doesn't mean that there's not things in life that can make you depressed. I mean, you can have a really sad situation in your life, and that can make you depressed, and that's okay. You know, usually time. You just have to have some time to get past that. But what we're going to talk about today is more things where someone's depressed and they don't really know why, or they don't have a real reason, and they're just it's more of a they would call it a clinical depression. So know that it's okay to be sad about something, and that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about people that are stuck in that depressed state and just
for no reason at all.
Yeah,
and they just feel bad.
They just want to be held. Uh-huh. That's probably what it is.
I want to be held too. Aww.
Yeah.
Okay.
So why don't we explain a little bit of what we see most, and I'll have me and Will talk a little bit about what we see with clients a lot too. And the best explanation I like for physiological depression is what we used in the Kick Your Fat in the Nuts book when we talk about using a woman that's pregnant as an example. And depression can occur for people as one option of an emotional or even a mental issue that can happen. And it's usually caused by low resources in the body. And, you know, we have minerals in our body, and with these minerals, signals travel to the brain through these minerals. That's how they travel. Just like if you put an electrical current in the bathtub, you get shocked, and that's not a good bath. Mm-hmm. You had a not relaxing bath when you did that.
Mm-hmm.
But those currents travel because there's minerals in the water. But if you just had distilled water, you could put a current in there, and it would not travel. So that's how people work. We were very electrical, kind of. Kenna's doing the robot right now, and I don't know why.
Breaking it down.
Uh-huh. But so if there's a lack of minerals or there's not enough, a lot of times the signals don't get to the brain, or the signals from the brain back to the body don't make that. And that can create a lot of heightened emotional issues. It can create depression. It can create other mental issues like bipolar. Maybe you think you're a fire truck, you know?
I usually do.
In the extreme, like, things could happen where it just, and people say, oh, well, you're a mental case.
Since there's always like an opposite effect, so are there people walking around that are just too happy?
Yeah, and those are the people you just want to smack them.
Yeah, okay.
And sometimes you do, and it makes you feel better. But the main thing to understand is that the result from the body not having the resources that it needs, and it could be for lots of different reasons that we'll get into some of them, but it's that lack of resources or the lack of ability to use them that can create either depression or other mental and emotional issues. So I like to look at a pregnant girl. Just
you're
because,
sick.
Because they get so round. Yeah, that's my
his fetish, pregnant
my fetish
women.
Is pregnant chicks. Because you can't get them pregnant.
Ah!
Oh, that was not good. But the situation is look at a pregnant person. When you make a baby, you have all these resources to make another whole human. They don't just show up. Ugh. It's not like sea monkeys where you just put them in the water
and then you've got them for 18 years at least, so that would make me depressed.
The sea monkeys or the kid?
No, the kid.
Oh, okay, my sea monkeys did not last that long. I was like, man, I got ripped off.
Mine are huge.
Yeah.
Mine are whales now.
Mine are at NYU. Uh-huh. But a woman, when she's pregnant, she's making this kid, it takes a lot of resources. So everybody knows that at some point a pregnant girl is going to snap and freak out. And we just accept it, and we say, that's okay, she's pregnant, we know it's going to happen.
I've been pregnant for a number of years.
Yeah, you might still be pregnant right now, and that's what's going on. There's nothing wrong with you. Mm-hmm. But the reason that happens is because all of their resources is being geared towards making this other human being, so they don't have enough for them to function properly and have their emotions in check and all that kind of stuff.
Kids are just sucking the life right out of you right from the beginning.
From the very beginning. Mm. And
I think they are technically parasites.
They really are.
A friend in medical school said, like, definitively they are.
They're,
oh, wow. Yeah.
Until you're like 70, right. And then you live in their garage, yeah. And then you're eating their food and stuff. But so if we look at that, it's a good example to understand that how it makes sense that these emotional issues can magnify when resources are low. So that's kind of what we're going to look at. And what other things do you see going on when you have clients with depression, Will?
Yeah, I think the body's a unit, and all the different markers that we're going to talk about today are all connected. So like you talked about low resources or an inability to use them. And the way a person can kind of identify that in themselves is by looking at a few simple measurements, like if their blood pressure is low, is a really obvious way.
It's a great sign that minerals are low.
Right. So also, this is a less commonly talked about one, if the breath rate is unusual, or not unusual, if it's off from the ideal. There's really, my favorite book on this whole topic is George Watson's Nutrition in Your Mind.
Yeah, it's a great book.
Yeah, and in that he talks about basically the speed at which your body is converting carbohydrates and energy into ATP, or converting like fuel sources into ATP. So that's oxidation. And through that, you can see if a person's oxidizing glucose too fast or too slow pretty accurately by looking at their breath rate. So if a person is wondering, oh, does my metabolism and my oxidation speed, or my metabolic type, as the term kind of came from his work, is that a factor? Well, you can look at your breath rate just by counting how many breaths you take in a minute. And if it's faster or slower than 15 or 16 breaths a minute, that could be one of the markers. You'd be like, oh, I need to do something about my metabolism to help fix this depression.
Right. So that can be why somebody might not have resources. It's not that they're not eating them, or even that they can't process them, and we'll get into that. But they may be just frying through them and ripping, you know, burning it up too quickly. So they eat, but then 30 minutes later, their body's already burned all that fuel off and they got nothing.
Yeah. Or on the flip side, they're not oxidizing fast enough. And either way, like, I guess the main thing to relate to people that are kind of new to the subject is the brain runs on glucose, like only on glucose or glycogen, like what you can get from proteins and fats, but it needs a steady stream of glucose for it to run right.
Not that kind. Kit Kat is not going to help.
Not an excuse to eat a Snickers. No. But if your body's burning through it too fast, which would be reflected in a fast breath rate, or not fast enough, then your brain is like, hey, I don't have the energy that I need. And your muscles are like that too. And I got particularly interested in this whole oxidation speed because it not only relates to your mental performance, but also your emotional health and your ability to produce energy and burn fat. They're all directly connected. So some people are depressed because they're overweight. Well, this is directly connected to that too. Like
right.
You can lose weight by looking at this factor.
So right. A lot of people that you see a lot of link between obesity and depression. And a lot of times it's not that the obesity is creating the depression. It's that both issues have the same underlying cause.
Yes, because I can say from I thought, okay, I won't get depressed anymore once I lose weight. And I've lost nearly 100 pounds and I still get depressed.
Sure.
So, it's not just the weight.
It's really
something
not.
Else, you know.
Right. And what happens, I think, is that we as humans, when a person goes toward depression or they don't have the resources, it could also be like, say somebody's oh wait, that's
Tony.
Me. No, but you see somebody that snaps and they're off the handle right away and they have a short temper and that can just be another result of those little resources. And I think that as humans, when the brain doesn't have the fuel that it needs to function, a lot of times we go to this doom, dark place, and we tend to focus on everything that is horrible. So when someone says that, I'm depressed, they're like, well, why am I depressed? They ask themselves that. And if you sit there and think about it, you're going to find some reasons. Yeah. Who can't find a reason why to be depressed? Everybody's got something.
I don't know. Will might be really
pretty. Pretty great.
Yeah.
He's really pretty.
He's pretty.
But what about this green jacket? Maybe you could
be
depressed.
Totally
maybe that doesn't look
that.
As good as you think it does.
Yeah, it could be.
It does.
It is wrinkled.
But we tend to find things when our physiology is putting us in this negative state. So we think that's the thing, and then we go to a psychologist and we talk about that one thing for 17 years to improve
it. Make a focus of it. Mm. I mean, it's all connected, your body and your mind. I mean, it's your head is on your body.
It's right on there.
It's connected. So what we're putting in our head and our body, it's connected. Did I make my point?
You
it's
did. Connected. It was a good point. Yeah. And it brought up a thought that I have is that we look at this correctly in everything in the world. If a car breaks down and it's over on the side of the road, we look. Does it have any gas left? If your toaster isn't working, you look to see if it's plugged in. You look to see if it's getting the juice it needs to function. You don't soak it in medication or send it to therapy. You just plug it in.
Oh. And with, I sent mine.
You sent your toaster. They have a special toaster therapy. I think that that's important, that we see that when we're depressed, it's easy to go to a negative place and find reasons to be depressed. But if we can give our brain the fuel it needs to function, all of a sudden those things that were a 10 to us and horrible become easier for us to manage. So they may just be a 2 or a 3. They're still in your life. They still suck. They're easier for you to deal with.
Yeah. And there's a lot of factors that can contribute to it, like a lot of legitimate external things, like, someone just died or whatever is going on. But I like and want to just reiterate what you just said about if you fix the physiology, it's going to help you deal with those other things. So, like, if you're sitting there listening, wondering, is it just my own head case or this stuff or this breakup I went through or whatever? Or is it my metabolism? I don't know. It's so many things. Well, it's probably all of them.
Yeah.
And you can make progress in all of them with different tools. Like, caring for your body is one really great way to help your mental state shift also.
Right. So what we're talking about here is giving you the tools to deal with those issues with more ease. Mm. And if you're new to listening to us and you haven't turned it off for one reason or another yet, when we talk if we talk about testing physiology, we teach you how to do that in any of my books, and we have a free digestion course on kickitinthenuts.com that shows you how to actually run those simple tests at home on yourself so you can get an understanding of how your body's operating.
Cool. Well, should we dive into some questions here?
I will take up to three questions.
Loyal listeners. Jamie from Berkeley, California. Why is my sister's depression so much worse around her period? I think this might be Jamie. She's actually talking about herself, right. But she says it's her sister.
Right, that happens. What do you think, Will?
Well, I think it's very much related to the same explanation you gave about the pregnant woman.
Like, sure.
Resources are going into making an egg and making it ready, and all the blood and plasma that's like excited to like start a new life, and then like, oh, show's over, and they dump it out.
Right.
All those resources still went to them. They're not going to like pull it back and make a bicep out of it. Like that's, right.
That cycle, to do that monthly cycle is a lot. It's expensive as far as resources go.
Who wouldn't be depressed if you were bleeding out your hole? For 7 days or however long it takes, plus the cramps. I mean, come on. I would love for a man to experience it once and just see if they don't cry.
I can promise to you that I would cry.
Yeah.
There's 100% guarantee of me crying.
Well, I think you go through this exact issue in great depth in your first book, the Done with Menstrual Cramps or Kick Menstrual Cramps in the Nuts, where we talk a lot about how depression and anxiety fluctuates with this. A lot to do with not only all the hormones and stuff, but the mineral resources and things. And in that book alone, you can learn how to, if that's your particular issue, it's a fantastic highlighted,
right,
you know, read for you to like get your finger on exactly what's off when you go through a cycle. Because not saying you're going to fix all the emotional swings that happen with the menstrual cycle, but you can definitely minimize the depression and anxiety and pain that can happen.
That happens to everybody else around you. I just have one request, that you change the title of that book to Kick Your Menstrual Cramps in the Vagina.
Oh, okay. That's a good, it's a good note.
No, but it's already been printed.
Oh, but it's also a great view on PMS and girls getting bitchy. And it's this, you know, lifelong joke that has been going on forever. But it's, if you understand what's going on, it's legitimate to understand that, just like we talked about, for some people, the emotional issue is going to be depression. For others, it's going to be, I'm going to snap and rip your face off. You know, it can manifest differently for different people, but it's all a result of resources being low, resources being used for something else right now, and that person being left with nothing to run their body.
I had a couple more questions too, which I forgot to ask. I'm very interested in how come when I get depressed, I want to eat everything, but when my friend gets depressed, she doesn't want to eat at all. What's up with that? That makes me depressed.
That makes you even sadder.
Yeah.
Well, we know that a lot of people will want to eat because they learn that if their resources are low, if they put something in, they at least have some resources and they can feel better. So it almost turns into like a craving even.
Mm-hmm.
Your body's craving nutrition.
But if her resources were low too, wouldn't she want some? Or maybe it's environmental that she's sad about. I mean, I guess it depends on what you're both depressed about.
She's sad about the ozone layer.
Yeah, maybe oceans. She's sad about that.
No, but I have seen this. I don't know if you've seen this, Will, too, but I think it kind of goes back to that place of some people, when they start to feel depressed, they just go to the darkest place. And they've kind of learned over years that they want to feel even worse. Because they're moving into that darker place. It's not in their personality, it's just their physiology is pushing them into that place that wants everything to be turmoil. And they found that by not eating, they can even go darker and darker and deeper and deeper into that hole.
Or vice versa, if eating, they can go deeper and deeper into the hole. Because when I'm like neck deep into a gallon of ice cream, I feel even worse, you know?
And you know it's not great, yeah. But you kind of keep, I mean, the ice cream's not done, so I'm going to knock it out, right? Exactly. I'm going to knock it out, so...
I'm not a quitter.
Right.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point to look at. Like, is the person eating to feel better or to feel worse, you know? Or are they not eating to feel better or feel worse? Because it could propel you into, like, same reason, like, some people would do drugs to help them be extra present or to totally tune out, you know?
Why some people cut on themselves or things like that. Yeah,
sure.
They want to feel even worse. Yeah.
Right, and that's when we start to get into, like, I mean, the base chemistry is still really important to look at, but then you also have to look at some other mental patterns and emotional patterns. Maybe they learned from their family or, you know, whatever that they come to.
Yeah, that makes sense. I remember when I was upset as a kid, my mom would always say, let's go get some ice cream or something like that. And so that always kind of cheered me up.
Yeah.
Boy, did she know that she didn't know what can of worms she was opening there.
And what's interesting about this is that all these things... It just seems from our experience that we see that maybe these issues don't go away, but they seem to demagnify. To where maybe if somebody has an issue that is so severe as they are cutter, if you can lift their physiology to help their brain function more, signals to travel better, maybe they just start to whittle wood or something. You know, maybe it just changes to something different, but it's still there.
Yeah. You're like, hey, I got a desk I need you to whittle down for me.
And that reminds me, again, of the book Nutrition in Your Mind, when we talk about the power of this, like to think, oh, well, if you're psychotic, like clinically psychotic, it's not a nutritional thing. There's something wrong with your brain.
Right.
Well, actually, like this research that George Watson did was able to pull people that were like, they were all in the psych ward, you know?
Yeah.
And he was
a lot of schizophrenics.
Yeah. Schizophrenics and people that were like committed villain or criminals.
Wow.
And he was able to shift them out of, like, in the middle of a psychotic episode, he was able to shift them and pull them back to being totally normal with vitamins and amino acids. And the research that he did was all clinically documented, but his peers all thought he was full of it because they didn't think you could actually create such a profound change in someone who's so off with vitamins.
Right.
Wow, that's crazy. So give a serial killer like some protein or whatever they're lacking, and then they just drop the knife or the gun.
But
I'm good.
But that's what happened with Martha Stewart. They just changed her physiology a little.
But that goes back again to your question about eating. Why do I eat a ton and this person doesn't eat at all? A cool little nuance you'll learn if you read the Nutrition in Your Mind book is that he discovered this on accident by finding that a certain set of nutrients were really balancing to half the population and very imbalancing to the other half of the test group. And then a different set of vitamins and nutrients were very balancing to the opposite set and vice versa. So he found and he was trying to figure out what was the difference. It's not just vitamins in general or amino acids in general. It was particular ones that he eventually figured out were affecting their metabolic rate, their oxidation rate.
I wish I read. I'd read.
Yeah. So in that you can see for some people, maybe binge eating, that would be something that would help temporarily improve the stream of glucose to the brain. Whereas for another person, you know, fasting might help shift them in some way, or they feel like it does.
It's really interesting. So far, this has been my favorite topic discussed. Yeah. This is also a question of mine. Do any particular foods make you more depressed or help with depression?
Ham makes me depressed.
Spam.
Spam, that's really depressing.
Well, I'd like Will to talk a little bit about sugar. Because that's something that a lot of people who deal with depression find that they also have cravings for. I just want you to talk a little bit about that spike and drop and what that can create.
Yeah, sure. So again, talking about the stream of glucose to the brain, for people that say you're a slow oxidizer, it's an imbalance you can learn about when you go through any of our courses, read any of the books, and you don't have enough sugar running to your brain at the moment, and you eat like a healthy meal, like healthy is, you know, it's so hard to say like what's healthy for you. But you eat what you conceive as a healthy meal, like turkey breast and a salad and, you know, even some sprouted grain bread or something like that. And you're still hungry and you want a sweet or whatever and you're just bummed about it. Your body is having a hard time breaking down those complex foods, those foods that have like slow burning carbs and proteins and fats that you really need to have good digestion to use. So it just wants energy, it wants sugar, it wants to be able to be on and for all the synapses to work right and for there to be fuel for the cells. So simple sugar is the fastest, easiest way to do that, especially if your digestion's not working well because those other foods just aren't available for you for fuel, period, even if they're organic, wild caught, whatever.
Yeah, one of the biggest processes that we do as human beings is just digest the food. That takes more resources than almost anything else that we do, even sex, unless you're really good at sex.
Right.
Never mind.
So with that, so even like when you eat, you could even experience a temporary drop in available energy because you're just trying to digest the food.
Yeah.
So people just want, I need sugar. So they'll
get tired right after you eat sometimes. Right. Yeah. Especially if it's like a big meal.
Yeah. Because all that blood and energy went to the gut. So the simple sugar just goes right to the bloodstream and restores that. And then just shows you like how powerful this whole oxidation speed thing is. Like that's why people would go for sugar at that time, you know.
So let's say that someone that deals with depression, they find that if they eat 4 Mars bars in a sitting, that they feel a whole bunch better for just a little bit until their depression kicks back in. Talk about why that happened.
Yeah. Well, again, because they're not getting stable, like consistent energy release
it's
from.
Like a spike.
Yeah, it's a big spike. It's a big insulin glucose spike. So for a moment, they have plenty of sugar to go around, and they can run their brain and they can run their body cells, and they can feel good because of that. They can breathe better, and they can they have blood pressure,
right?
You know, so that's nice. But when they try to eat a healthy meal, which requires good digestion, they don't get anything out of it other than like a bunch of fermenting toxic could be helpful food,
because they can't break that down.
Yeah,
where the sugars are easier to break down.
Yeah,
the other problem is when those sugars spike like that and insulin spikes with it, the insulin can go a little too high, and then it sweeps too much sugar out too quickly.
Mm.
And now that person's right back down to having zero, and they're depressed, and they're like, man, I need Mars bars all day long.
Right. They're just riding the roller coaster.
Right.
Wow. Yeah. Fascinating, fellas. It's fascinating. Vicky from Seattle, Washington. What is the difference between having the blues, depression, and just being sad?
Well, we talked about that a little bit, and I think that it's a very big misconception. And I'll say this, and you know, when we look at underlying causes for low resources, it almost always goes back to an inability to digest food correctly and pull the minerals out of your food. So when I first lost my voice and I was seeing medical doctors, they were all putting me on the reflux drugs and those turn off your stomach acid, which turns off your digestion and turns off your ability to break down food and pull down the minerals out. So my blood pressure was in the dirt, like people I see now. It was like under 100. I mean, it was really, really low. And I was always a person in my life that had never been depressed. When I looked at people that were depressed, I wanted to just shake them and just be like, why don't you just not be depressed? You know, I was that idiot that thought it was just like a choice that they were making. But when I was on all these meds and had no digestion, my blood pressure was under 100, and I had serious depression. Like, I was balled up in the fetal position crying at episodes of the Brady Bunch.
Oh, Tony.
I know. It was really sad. But as soon as I fixed digestion and blood pressure came back up, that was when I realized, oh, this is a real thing. It wasn't that I just decided to be sad or I wanted attention and I wanted to get a hug. Mm-hmm. It was that physiology was pushing me into that place. And I think that's the big misconception. People just think that it's all the same thing. The blues and being sad and depression are all the same thing, and why don't you just be happy instead? But when you don't have the fuel to function, I mean, it's like telling your car, well, when you're out of gas, well, why don't we just drive to a gas station instead of being stuck here on the highway? You're not going to talk your car into doing that.
Yeah, and what this person's asking, I'm no doctor, but I think depression's more lasting than like just being sad or having the blues one day. Because, I mean, when I go to the Netherlands to visit and stuff, it's cold, so I get depressed just because it's like, it's night time early, it's, you know, kind of cold, it's dreary looking. So just environmentally, I can get depressed, you know. Whereas in L.A., it's sunshine all the time, and woo! You're happy, you know.
And maybe you're not as depressed as you would be in a deep depression, but you're just
a little blues. Not depressed, but yeah, I have the blues a little bit. Yeah, that's more of a good word. So I think depression's like more severe than just being sad or be having the blues. I think that's kind of temporary. But if you can't seem to get out of the funk, I think that's what a depression is, when it just stays there.
Yeah.
You know what's interesting about that too, and nobody asked about vitamin D, but we should talk about that, because when you look at seasonal situations, or like even in like places like Seattle where it rains a lot and depression seems to be higher, you know, out in the sun, you make vitamin D, and vitamin D holds calcium in the bloodstream and thickens that blood and makes the blood pressure higher. So a person can feel better by getting more sun. That's why a lot of girls feel great after they go and tan, and that's why they tan. They get addicted to that because they feel great.
You need to go sell some vitamin D over there.
But vitamin D is not great the way that people use it now. Let's have Will tell us about why that's so not so great.
Yeah, well, one, it's way, when you're, correct me if I'm wrong on this, but when you go out in the sun, your body can, to a degree, regulate the amount of vitamin D it wants to make.
Right.
You know, you can still be in the sun, and it could just be, okay, I've had enough. And and the skin will still be getting exposure, but it won't necessarily be making vitamin D out of it, which is a really cool thing.
It's kind of like Knight Rider.
Yeah, it's wild.
It like does stuff without you telling it to do it. Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah. And just the fact it can make a vitamin out of light is amazing. But when you're supplementing with it, like you can't even buy milks or nut milks or whatever that don't have tons of vitamin D added to it. Your body doesn't have a choice if you're ingesting that or not, if you're going to pour it into your stomach.
Right. So, in supplementation form.
Yeah. Especially the mega doses that are often recommended when a doctor will say, hey, take this. It's like way more than your body actually needs or wants usually. So that, think of vitamin D like just a magnet for calcium. It pulls calcium, which is why we need it to get calcium from our food. Mm-hmm. But it also, it's still a magnet whether you need to pull it from your food or not. It's just tons of it in your bloodstream now that you just took the prescription dosage. And it's just pulling calcium just anywhere from your muscles, your bones, your nervous system, everywhere. So that makes, one, the blood pressure potentially too high, which maybe people feel great when they take it still. But they're depleting things like their skeletal system density and their muscle function. But that calcium also then kind of morphs its structure once it's in the blood. And it doesn't just go back into the skeletal system.
Where it belongs, where it came from.
Yeah. Now you're going to get like weird things, like I don't know if gout's directly related to it, but conditions like that, like arthritis and such.
Right, it deposits in joints and stuff.
Yeah.
So when, you know, we do want vitamin D, and we talked about this some in the show we did about the common cold, when we talk about how when you pull all the calcium out of the tissues, you're going to turn off your immune system. So listen to that show if you want to get into that. We won't go too far into that now, but just want to cover that vitamin D can help people lift their blood pressure a little bit, but when you use too much, you're going to cause other problems as well.
Mm-hmm. John from Destin, Florida, and I'll tell you right now, if you're from Florida, you might be depressed. Lift more weights.
I'm from Florida.
I know, that's why I said it. Lift more weights, best antidepressant around. Okay.
I want to talk about both sides of this. Will, do you want to talk a little bit about benefits that can come from doing this kind of stuff?
Yeah, and with the proviso knowing that I also want to say, for some people, they feel worse.
Absolutely. That'll be your part.
I'm actually, and I'm happy with addiction. I would say I'm clinically exercise addicted. You know, and that's a real thing I learned about. And I totally am that, where I get very uncomfortable if I don't work out every day. There's like this pent up energy and angst. And I start to eat weird, you know, and I start to eat a lot more junk food and that sort of stuff. And for a while, I didn't understand why. But when I first took the course out in Chicago that taught us all this magic cool stuff, I realized like why I was eating a bunch of deep dish pizza and root beers every night was like, oh, I needed to like acidify my bloodstream, and it was affecting my physiology in a way that helped me deal with the extra energy.
Kept you balanced.
Yeah,
for your specific situation.
Yeah, because for me, I had through years of weight training like conditioned my body to have extra blood pressure, so when it goes into the gym, it has like a good workout and a good pump, and I don't get lightheaded, or you know, and so I can, you know, I can lift more weights. And there's a lot of endorphins that come with that, like everybody knows, like when you jog or lift weights, whatever, there's some hormonal shifts that happen.
And I'm sure you get real happy when you take off your shirt.
Well,
and you see yourself.
It's more like the insanely hot girls in LA at the gym that are just fun to be around. So that helps. And that also is a good antidepressant. But
it doesn't work the same if you live in the Midwest.
No. But, well, depends what you're into, I guess. Yeah. But even if you're out running in a forest, it's oxygenating. There's a lot of things your body loves. Just like when you take a dog for a walk. Like, it loves it because it knows it's like, it's kind of that, like, reward system that our genetics have built into it. We know it's good for, our body knows it's good for us if we have the resources to do it well and our joints move right.
I thought dogs got excited because they just want to pee on stuff.
I was thinking,
if I got to just pee on everything everywhere I went, right. I would go running every day.
But you know, that if I had to have an addiction, which I have several, I'm sure, that would be one of them to have. I mean, that would be the best one to have, I would think, unless it's just breaking you down and you know, so much.
Sure, and that can be a problem.
Yeah, and for a long time, I did totally overtrain because I just thought it was going to work, you know, but you know, a more balanced approach has made it really enjoyable to go to the gym. And I think there's a lot of like just base physiology that our bodies and all mammals just really love about getting out and moving and breathing and flexing our muscles.
And so, John, so it can be very beneficial for depression for some people. But in the same regard, if somebody has really low resources and that's why they're turbo depressed, once they work out, that's going to use more resources. And they may even feel a little better during that actual workout. But afterwards, after they've used the very small amount they had, they're going to crash hard and their depression can get much worse. I've had quite a few clients that there was such on that borderline of low resources that when they started working out with me too much, I could tell right in the session. Like, I had a client, she would just start crying in the middle of every session for no reason. I was
don't be telling my story.
I was like, you know what? Look, we're going to take a couple days off this week, and we're just going to focus on you getting your resources back up. And then they would be fine. Yeah. So don't look at it like it is the answer, because for some people, it can make them worse.
Yeah, but even a lazy ass like myself, once I get in the groove of it, I really like to exercise too, and I can feel a difference, you know, with anxiety levels, like did I exercise and did I do this? And I'm a very low mineral person, so I think it just depends on, like, every person, like you said, individually, like what a person can handle and stuff.
And a lot of people asked about anxiety this week too. And remember, let's bring that up, because I think we're going to do that next couple weeks. We wanted to do its own show because it can have a lot of different stuff. But remember to bring that up. So for you guys that asked about anxiety, know that we'll do that in its whole show pretty soon.
Mm-hmm.
So you just got to be anxious until then.
Exactly. Okay, so... Yeah, so stay anxious for the anxiety show. Tim from Lexington, Kentucky. How do daily habits and routines influence the depth of the depression?
I don't know.
I guess it depends on what your habits and routines are.
Well, yeah. I think this is a really great topic that and touches on some aspects of chemistry we haven't really looked at yet. And that's like looking at the timing of your emotions.
Yeah.
You know, and the way you're running your day. Because, for example, I know some people I'm very close to that are always in a good mood in the middle of the day. But like some of the time, they'll wake up really depressed. And once they have breakfast, they better. And then at night, they're anxious, you know. But they're never depressed at night. They're always anxious at night and depressed in the morning and fine in the middle of the day. So when you're looking at, like, am I this earlier question, am I sad or depressed?
Do you have to change the iPod for this person during the day so that the music is according?
Yeah, and the volume levels, it's all over the place. But, like, when that's happening, we like to encourage our clients to, like, look at your chemistry, like, when those things are going on. Because you can see, like, oh, if your blood pressure is, like, extra low in the morning because it's been 8 hours since you ate anything, that's a really great, like, imbalance to start working on, try to fix that.
So wake up in the middle of the night, eat something, go back
to
bed.
Go pee in a cup.
No, but when you wake up, get to breakfast before you start talking to people and start wiping your sadness all over.
Eat your egg while you're on the toilet.
Right. Yeah.
But you can look at those things and be like, how do our daily routines affect depression? You can start to monitor, like, oh, do you get anxious or depressed, like, on your drive home from work? Maybe because it's been, like, 5-6 hours since you've eaten. And then you can start to look at, like, well, why would that be? Oh, maybe my blood sugar's low. Maybe I should put a snack in my car. But all these little things about monitoring your little chemistry throughout the day and throughout the night, you're going to be able to, like, troubleshoot.
Because as people, we tend to look at it like, traffic must make me depressed. Right. When the realization is it's been 5 or 6 hours since you've eaten.
Yeah.
Why don't you have something to eat?
Yeah. Which reminds me, one of my favorite philosophers is Friedrich Nietzsche, and he had this, this is a modern interpretation of his metaphor, but he basically thought the primal body was way more in charge of the body than the mind or the prefrontal cortex. Mm. To the point where I make this analogy, it's like Nietzsche basically thought of, like, this speaking voice as like a baby that thought it was driving, but it was actually, like, in its car seat with a little fake plastic wheel facing backwards.
Uh-huh.
And
it's like, it still thinks it's driving.
Right? You're not running the show. You know, the body's like the dad in the front seat or the mom in the front
but
seat.
But I turned this and then things happened out there. It must have been me.
Well, this time it didn't turn when I turned, but it will. Uh-huh. You know, it's
it's just like it's a machine. Just like you were saying, if your car is out of gas, it's not going to go. And it's like people, if we're not getting what we need physically, for our machine to run, then all kinds of malfunctions are going to be
like
happening.
That one. Oh, yes, yeah. Malfunctions like that.
I need an apple or something. Cool. Okay, let's see here. Wow, we've got somebody from across the pond, Mark from Australia. We're branching out, boys.
We are. Stand clear.
I'm very interested in finding out more about our second brain in the gut and how an imbalance of bad bacteria, parasites in the gut, can cause an imbalance of serotonin, as the majority of serotonin comes from the gut, or so I believe. Wow. He sounds a little too smart for me.
He's probably fancy, too. He could probably talk science with us.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that I agree. That's my understanding, that I think about 90% of it comes from the gut.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. I was just talking about that.
Second brain. Is that what you're just talking about?
No, not the second brain, but like huge amounts of serotonin.
What are you pointing at, Will? And why don't you point up when you're talking about second brain? Yeah. Just because we're guys, you think our second brain is somewhere else?
Exactly.
Well, he's pointing at my intestinal tract. Right?
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I know what your second brain is.
Yeah, but let's talk about that a little bit. And I also want you to talk a little bit about hormones, Will, because I think that a lot of people kind of blame hormones like they're the bad guy and they're doing everything wrong, so why don't we cram other hormones in there? But a lot of times the body, when resources are low, will jack up a hormone to try and get things to function correctly. And when one hormone's high, it's got to push other ones low because they kind of have that ebb and flow.
Totally. Like when we look at the imbalances in the system, there's a real hierarchy to them. And this whole oxidation thing we've been talking about, the slow or fast oxidizer or the carb or fat burner, is above the priorities of the autonomic nervous system, being in a sympathetic or fight or flight imbalance or a parasympathetic, like rest and digest imbalance. And we'll oftentimes see like an oxidation imbalance and a corresponding autonomic nervous system imbalance, because the nervous system is doing things like secreting different amounts of different hormones to try to regulate that oxidation speed.
Right.
So it'll do things like excite, like say you're a slow oxidizer like most diabetics or maybe all diabetics, they'll usually be in a fight or flight or sympathetic nervous system imbalance because those hormones associated with the fight or flight state speed glycolysis or the conversion of sugar into energy.
So it's just trying to help out any way it can.
It's trying to push the gas pedal down because the speed of the stream of glucose is running too slowly. So people are like, oh man, I'm always on. My brain is always on. I'm always kind of stressed and always kind of on edge.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, you're a really slow oxidizer and your nervous system's trying to help you out. There's a way you can tell if that's actually happening through a little equation you can do if you take your blood pressure and your breath rate. And if you take the top number in the blood pressure, the systolic, and subtract it by the diastolic, you'll get a number called the pulse differential. If you divide your pulse differential by your breath rate, it gives you a number, a resultant. If that number is over 3, you're in a fight or flight imbalance. If it's under 2, you're in a parasympathetic imbalance. So that's another way to look at, like, are my emotions being affected by my metabolism and my electrolyte levels?
Everybody's calculator just broke.
Yeah, I know. I'm like, whoa, you just talked about math. All right. So John from Green, Ohio. Cooking, good in general, is like a fast-acting antidepressant for me, but I have to watch so that positive doesn't turn into a negative. Thankfully, I have my music, and I know I can't gain calories from that. Good for you, John.
Are we about to play a John song?
Is he
a song?
So.
Does it sound like he was pitching us his new album that, he's selling on the docks when he plays down there?
And although cooking for him takes away depression, I know people that hate to cook, and the thought of it, you know, sends them into like a psychosis kind of thing.
So look at this, John. I think it could be a situation where it's kind of like if you're on that edge of maybe you have some physiology that could push you towards depression, but maybe it's not so bad. It's easy to find things in your life that you enjoy that just lift you up enough to where you don't feel depressed. But if you had horrible physiology things going on and you were seriously depressed, something like cooking probably would not make you better. You also wonder, is it the eating part that's helping him, giving him more resources? that could be benefiting you as well, too.
Yeah. Stephanie doesn't really have a question. She just says depression and or anxiety, and we're also doing that show, like you said, later on.
Right. Anxiety. So we'll cover that as well. So, Will, what would you say is the moral of the show?
The moral of the show, I'd like maybe summarize to help people like gather all the different like things we mentioned to that there could be factors. Mm-hmm. Let's just summarize those real quick. So when we look at someone who has low or high blood pressure, usually low blood pressure would go with depression. Usually right. high blood pressure would be more like stress cases. You know? Right. If their metabolism is off, like the oxidation speed, which they can largely tell by their breath rate. Like if they have a nice balanced breath rate, then that's probably going to be a good thing for them, as opposed to one that's too fast or too slow could cause depression or anxiety.
Right.
And also their nervous system responding to that issue could make them stuck in like a too restful of a state, like a parasympathetic state, or too anxious of a state in a sympathetic state, because of how their body's handling sugar and digestion in general. So I would say overall, look at those things, your blood pressure and your breath rate and your digestion, and see, is there any room for improvement to get my body into the ideal ranges that they should be? And the progress charts and the teaching points on the coalition are a really helpful way that they could get guidance in right. that realm.
The coalition is a site, a nonprofit site that we teach about in the course that you can use to monitor your own physiology, and it kind of shows you how to do some of the tests as well. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times if you do see that your blood pressure is low, then it's time to understand, okay, why is it low? Mm-hmm. And you're going to want to look to digestion, and we can teach you to do things like using a sea salt or some concentrates, mineral drops type things, and things that you can do to lift up your minerals a little bit.
And people can learn for free at kickitinthenuts.com, and they can sign up for the 4-week free digestion course. And we also have another course, a 12-week course for Kick Your Fat in the Nuts. But they can learn how to do all the self-testing there
right.
and read about digestion and stuff.
So the moral is don't be sad.
Yeah.
Oh, you know, another thing we didn't mention yet that's really important is medications.
Yeah, I knew
that. So one of the things I learned from you like a year ago, I think, was a lot of the times antidepressants work by causing the body to retain more electrolytes. Like they don't pee them out.
Right,
as well.
It blocks their ability to pee out a lot of their salts.
Yeah, so their blood pressure comes up. I mean, that's a problematic way of dealing with it, I'm sure, because like the kidney should be filtering stuff, and now it just
right.
can't.
Right.
So it creates other symptoms which require more medications and which require higher doctor bills and things like that. So it's not the great way to do it. But when you look at like, oh, my antidepressants, they were helping me. I felt a lot better, and I can't get off them. Well, I've had tons of clients, even like a lot of young waify girls, get off of their meds right away as soon as they learn this, as soon right. as they were able to like take salt and hydrochloric acid to digest their food better, and all of a sudden they're off their meds. And these are people that like had multiple strokes by age 24 or whatever. They're good. They've never been depressed.
And I love you talked about one lady that she was on blood pressure lowering medication. And, of course, then they put her on depression medication later. So talk about why that happened.
Yeah. So they're just lowering this one parameter of, like, the high blood pressure. And she was kind of doing it, you know, she was testing her blood pressure, but not very religiously. She was just taking it by doctor's orders. And then she started getting depressed. And the doctor gave her the antidepressant to push her blood pressure back up. So she's in this balancing act so long, like decades, uh-huh. like for wow. decades. And when I tested her, she had gotten off her blood pressure meds for like 3 days so she could get a more honest look of like where she's really at. And her blood pressure was still low. It was like lower than it should be. And she's still on the antidepressants. So she had really like kind of jacked up her blood pressure and her digestion with all these drugs.
Ryan will just say that it's not that the doctor's evil. They just, it's not in their training that they don't even know that antidepressants raise blood pressure. It's just that's just what we see that they do with just about every situation. So they're just doing what they're taught. But they're, you know, if a blood pressure lowering med is synthetically causing that blood pressure number to be lower, it can go so low that the person ends up being depressed. So they got to be on two drugs instead of none.
And they're basically taught what like prescription and pharmaceutical companies, right, want to teach them. Definitely for like if they're funding the whole program
right, that's
or whatever,
who funds
then,
all those yeah.
then that's what they're going to be learning.
Yeah.
I bet people are going to be really depressed now when they're like, oh, I could just buy a sea salt shaker and I've been paying for years of therapy.
Yeah. And it's not just cheaper, it's actually potentially fixing the real physiological
yeah,
problem.
Not hurting your organs.
Because we didn't even talk about that, but these drugs are highly toxic. They're not just fixing it in a cheap, easy way. They're like screwing you physiologically, and they're just pushing one parameter. So don't think it's not a Band-Aid. It's like a Band-Aid with mercury in it. You know, it's like, it's not, you know. But again, like, it's not our place to say whether you should or shouldn't get off of your medication. That would be totally illegal,
right.
and we would get sued and stuff. But what we do want to say is, like, look at what is actually going on in your body. And what does the medication do? And what can nutrition do? That's all we're saying.
And make sure that you know that if you're on antidepressants now, don't just go off of them. That's not the way to do it. The way to do it is to do the work to fix your physiology, get your blood pressure up, and then talk to your doctor about what to do to come off of that. Because just stopping some of those can cause horrific side effects and all kinds of trouble if you just stop them cold turkey.
Yeah. And we usually want clients to make themselves, like, no longer qualify to take that medication, right? By, like, we use nutrition and diet to fix their physiology to push them so far. Like, say they're on a blood pressure lowering med. We change their diet to help them get their blood pressure so low that it's normal, that if they continue taking the medication, it actually pushes it too low. And that's really so. Rather than just jumping off of it and hoping they fix it with nutrition, it's like, do the work first so that you no longer even qualify as an applicant for that drug. Like, you don't get to use it.
That's really good. I had one last question. I don't know if either one of you can answer it, but how come some people are homicidal and some people are suicidal?
That's interesting.
Another show? Or?
Yeah, I think that's a whole other show.
Wow.
But I hope that you're not asking for a specific
reason. No, I have a cousin that I'm asking for.
Yeah, he wanted to know, why do I want to punch you? Okay, well, we're out of time, but I want to wrap up by saying this, that I think the main thing to understand is that if you are dealing with depression, know that you're not wrong. It's really going on. There's things that are really causing that. I know people have probably told you that it's in your head, or why don't you just not be depressed, but they don't understand what's going on. So know that it's real, but also know that you can do things about it, and that you can take steps to improve it, and that even your, you know, situation can get much better.
Mm-hmm.
So hop it up.
Oh, yeah. All right. So if you want to learn more about how to look at your own chemistry, you can read any of Tony's books or take the free 4-week digestion course at kickitinthenuts.com. Catch us on the next episode where we'll be talking about something.
Probably anxiety.
Yeah, maybe anxiety, but don't be too anxious waiting. All right. Thanks for tuning in to Kick It Naturally, where it's okay to talk about your poop.
Oh, yeah. And poop. Oh, bye-bye. 'Cause I know a place where the sun is on.